So this afternoon, I would like to explore with you this word even-mindedness. You know, in some ways, Becca are sitting in the center of things. So I got one of my poems to, you know, maybe that's all I should do, you know, is just read a poem, get it over with, and you know. Returning from so many journeys, stories piled upon stories, closing chapter after chapter. Some small cave, hidden away, some text forgotten for centuries, held tightly in our silence. This river of our own mythologies. Hidden tightly in the silence, this river of our own mythologies. You who have abandoned yourself one too many times have finally sat down, knowing nothing is forgotten in this place, only amplified. This meditation hall filled to the brim. Stepping back, moving out of this house of dreams, into your own center, holding this lacquered begging bowl, holding last year's dreams over it, knowing this simple gesture. Hand opens, dropping it leaf by leaf into this bottomless bowl. I was here to celebrate all of this living, bargaining over. A place where the hummingbirds come. To taste the sweetness of your own openness. A place where the hummingbirds come to taste the sweetness of your own openness. The insecurity slips at last, the rain washing it down the green hillside into the creek, undistinguished from tears or just toxins of growing up, or just toxins of growing up. Sitting like a stone Buddha, unmoved by the longings and the dislikes. Now, no need to move away from the great suffering, or even to be enchanted by the great joy. One sits in even-mindedness with a boundless heart. Earth, water, fire, air find no footing here. One rests this exile over, to praise form and the formless, a world where emptiness, just the word, emptiness, where just the word brings your hands together, gives way to a bow in this great understanding. You know now when these words are used, luminous or boundless. It is no stranger. You know you can sit in this unknowing, blessed by a taste of grace. So, you know, when I first, I guess in the, it's funny, it's almost 50 years, 1966. Oh my God, that's awful, you know. I read this book on concentration and I really thought, okay, now I know where I'm going. Of course, in those years, there wasn't a whole lot of info. So it took me some years and, you know, I was fortunate, things like Suzuki Roshi or, the Blue Mountain Meditation Center in Berkeley, and I hung out with this group called the Tibetan Floating Lotus Magic Opera Company, you know, which was really cool, you know. But all it did was make me realize that somehow, culturally, I had to move beyond this culture and try to find what I was looking for. And unfortunately, I realized I couldn't make it at Zen Center. It was way too, I don't know, they were just too straight for me. And I was totally a mess, you know? So I needed to find a place to be a mess, you know? So, you know, the whole thing of just tearing yourself down, going overland to India in those years, was actually a great teaching, you know, of just kind of moving day to day, train to buses to, you know, different wonderful people in their homes and kindness. And eventually coming to Asia, and the first couple of years before I came to Vipassana insight practice, I was in the Tibetan tradition. And one of the truths of the Tibetan tradition when it came to this practice of the Brahma Viharas is they started with equanimity. And so sometimes I feel like, oh, it's so important to have that even-mindedness. So much of this practice is about learning to sit in your center, you know, and not to be pulled or pushed away from things, and not in a sense of, you know, it's not, it could easily be misconstrued as some way of a kind of denial or a numbness that's there. In the sense of, and sometimes I think Buddhist practice can get a little bit of that, in the sense of removing yourself from the situation, you know, kind of sitting back too much. But that's not what this is. This is actually sitting in the center of the world, and it's kind of sitting in the center of the truth of the longing of the world. And that somehow sitting in that center, there is a sensitivity that is inherent in sitting in that center. I always go back to this image, I guess it's kind of imprinted on my mind of the mountains itself. I think Mount Shasta for California is like this. I remember when I came back to the States in 71 or 72, and I went, one of the things I did, I went up, I had to climb Mount Shasta, you know, just to, as a kind of image in my mind that somehow there was a means at the top of the mountain, you know. It's interesting, I have to say this. There's a hot springs up at the top, you know. Not well known, but there is one there, you know. And there's something about the mountain itself. But I like the whole thing of Kailash, where there's a mountain, you know, and sometimes referred to as a crystal or a pyramid, and having its four sides, you know. And that this, the truth of it is that these are cultivations. They're things that we cultivate as a means or a result, you could say, of a kind of sitting in the center of ourselves. You know, one of the things in the this that kindness is one side of it, or the metta. The compassion we've spoken about, in the sense of how do we hold the our own and the collective suffering in some way. But there's joy, you know? And the joy, you know, as a translation, it's, you know, in some ways is sympathetic joy. But guess who it has to start with? You know, it has to start with you, you know? And for me, I remember, and one of the things was when my son was very little, I think I had just somehow separated myself from this particular Brahmavihara. And there was some point, he was probably 4 or 5, and he had all these Tonka trucks, and he'd build this big mound of dirt. And he was out playing with his trucks, you know. And for some reason, I had thought and tried to practice this and all that, but suddenly I got it. And there was a piece that, you know, I recognized that in my process of growing up somehow, that there was something that was so basic in the simplicity that I had lost. And that I had lost in that simplicity was that early I had to create comparison. You know, and comparison means that, oh, I wanted to be loved. You know, like little kids, you know. But somehow I had to prove or do something to be loved. And so the next thing I knew, I began this cultivation of comparison, you know. And what that comparison did was it separated me from the simple, from the truth of this, you know, it's really eyes of a child, you know. And somehow I think in this practice we have to re-establish that, the eyes of a child. One of the beauties of my teachers in Asia was they had great wisdom and great heart, but there was also a cultivated innocence. You know, it was something that they had cultivated. And the same way that for us is that, you know, it seems like the whole comparing mind is endless and creates this incredible amount of self-judgment and, you know, and never enoughness, you know. And so there is always this leaning somehow that we'll get it better next time. And it's always next time, you know. And this whole practice is somehow we have to stop in our tracks and recognize that we can't use comparison. What we really have to use is the power of innocence, of openness, of simplicity, as the eyes that we look through, you know. And those eyes can't be from somewhere else. They have to be presented here, you know, always here. There's no other place for them, you know. And that we actually begin to train ourselves to stay here, you know, with that innocence, you know. It's really such a pure thing, this practice of just sitting, you know. Ultimately, sometimes I think there's so many method to do. But I'm not so sure if the doing actually, you know, it's a way to create a means for us to find ourselves in the center of our experience, you know. And then if we can do that, then we can begin to actually see that the comparison, the suffering in the world, complexity in some ways has to be filtered, you know, filtered back to this, you know, the eyes of a child, you know, of how to see, you know. It's interesting about this little piece about how sometimes I meet people that they're so attached to their suffering, you know, that's how they hold the world. You know, it makes me really sad, you know, because it's where they feel safe in the old, in the constructions, in not in their happiness. But actually in the constructions of their past imprinted on present that doesn't give them that, you know. And here we come to this practice and we sit, and I'm not saying, you know, you have all this garbage, you know, this looks so, you know, quiet and peaceful here, and everybody looks so calm, and it's all bull, you know. What's really happening here is this incredible, you know, they talk about purification, so there's this incredible amount of garbage and junk going on in this room that, you know, is hopefully with the awakefulness is being seen and disentangled on some fashion or manner, you know. And as it begins to untangle and you know, in a way, sometimes just with the ability to see, you know, you don't have to do anything with it. You have to simply actually see it, you know. And seeing it means you have to feel it. And if you can feel it, then there's a possibility, you know. Then it's no longer kind of numbness or some separateness or some, you know, it's actually this process of integrating the whole part of ourselves, including all your garbage and storytelling, you know. It has to be in somehow included and seen for what it is. And it takes, in some sense, it takes, I think that these Brahma Viharas, they are the principles of purification, the principles of letting go, you know? So the mind, yes, we train it, but what are we training for? You know, we're training it so it kind of drops down, that then begins to inhabit a body, and a fearless heart, you know. And a fearless heart has all of these aspects, you know. It understands what sitting in the center, this even-mindedness, that is not a numbness, but is actually, the eyes are open, the ears hear, you know. You taste, you smell, you feel. You're all here, you know. And with that, being all here, then one of the inevitable consequences of that being here is that there is a balance of the wisdom and heart, you know. And yes, it will shine in different ways, you know. And sometimes it's just simple kindness, you know. It's like, oh, this is something inherent. You know, when, in a sense, I can use the language, when you get out of your own way, you know, then it's just a natural truth, you know. And that you will respond. And sometimes it's a piece of your old story. Sometimes it's a physical discomfort, you will respond to it, you know. And you will then respond to the world. What does it present to you, you know? And what is the consequences of being in the center of yourself, you know? Oh, no. When I experience it, when I feel it, when I see it in another, there is a wonderful response. I love, in different times I go for teachings, one of the Dalai Lama teaches a lot from Shantideva, I guess he's with Barack Obama today or yesterday, somewhere right in there, you know, good things. So, but I love when I think of compassion, and I think of kind of honesty and how to face and hold the world. I think of some of the lines. This is from the lines from Shantideva. May I be a guard for those that need protection, a guide for those on the path, a boat, a raft, a bridge for those which for those that wish to cross the rushing stream. A lamp in the darkness, a resting place for the weary, a healing medicine for all who are sick, a vase of plenty and a tree of miracles. And for the boundless multitudes of living beings, may I bring sustenance and awakening, enduring like the earth and the sky until all beings are free from sorrow and all beings are awake. You know, that's compassion. It's interesting when we kind of look at our lives in some way. One of the things we have to understand, and sometimes I get upset with it, and it's called karma. You know? And there's kind of two ways. I mean, this is my understanding of it anyway, which is kind of limited in the kind of vernacular and the scholarly side of things. But I understand there's a word, vipaka, and it simply means fruit or result, you know. And I have some way to influence some of it, but some of it is, you know, I'm somewhat powerless over it. There are circumstances that happen, you know, and I can't control. I get sick, you know, or things come together and they fall apart. People and relationships and all sorts of things, you know. That's the way it is, you know, on some level, you know. And I love, you know, in the kind of tradition, the morning daily reflections, you know, in the sense of sobering, that somehow it's good to stay very sober with how things are, because it actually gives us this possibility of even if we don't have the power over some of the vibhaka, some of the results of experience and others and situations that we get into, you know. So the five daily reflections. I like this particular kind of form of it. I am of the nature to grow old. There is no way to escape growing old. Rats. You know. I am of the nature to have ill health. There is no way to escape ill health. I am of the nature to die. There is no way to escape death. All that is dear to me and everyone I love are of the nature to change. There is no way to escape being separated from them. My actions are my only belongings. I really like this translation. My actions are my only belongings. I cannot escape the consequences of my actions. My actions are the ground upon which I stand. You know. Sobering. And yet, so much of knowing this and being able to just simply know that that's true actually turns us towards wisdom and also towards a good heart, you know, that you are not going to escape any of this, you know. And for some reason, always strikes me, my only possessions, you know, my only possessions are my actions, you know. And it's kind of a power, especially in a, you know, a culture that loves to collect, you know. And so to begin to understand kind of these are kind of the virtues of of sitting in the center of yourself, you know, and doing it over and over and over again. You know, that's the thing I see about this practice. I think, you know, after almost 50 years of this, I'm still trying to figure it out. You know, it's still mysterious to me that sometimes, you know, something comes up and I go, wow, I didn't think of that one for 60 years, you know. Oops, tells a little age. But anyway, you know, and it comes up and you know, and for a moment, I believe it. It is part of our mythology, you know. And then there's the even-mindedness saying, you know, maybe I don't see it as clearly as I remember it or believe it. You know, it's really such a great relief, and it really comes from this upekkha, this even-mindedness that simply doesn't buy it all, you know? And what we try to train here so much is not just about your history, but is just about that river of garbage and trivia that goes through your mind, you know? It's an amazing amount of material, you know? And it's like a river. It just does it ever stop, you know? And, you know, one of the wonders people say, oh, well, you know, I remember when I first started meditating, I thought I actually could stop thinking, you know. It was a little bit of false view. But, and it happens, it does happen, you know, but it's a temporary experience that due to causes and conditions arises, you know. And then you think, oh, well, and then suddenly, ta-da, ta-da, you know, here comes something you had not imagined or could ever believe, you know. We are kind of miraculous that way, you know. It's really kind of fun in that way. Well, hopefully you can get to where it's fun, you know, and that we can begin to kind of separate out, because really what this is in some ways is we have these sense doors. And these sense doors, you know, I read somewhere that 11 million bytes hit our sense doors at any one time, and we only process about 30,000 of them, you know, which is a lot. But it means that there is selective selection going on constantly within our experience, you know, and to understand that that is a limited view, you know. So you're walking around in a limited view. And part of our understanding, as we understand kind of the consequences, this thing of, you know, things happen, or what is it, shit happens, whatever, you know, out of nowhere, things appear, you know? And that we have this capacity, you know, to actually sit and not buy it for its first image or first thought, you know. And that to me is the practice, you know. And it's actually being able to separate out somewhat the content of our material, which is always going on. It's like this river of stuff going on all the time. And then there is the knowing of it, which is simply recognizing, oh, there's a process called thinking going on. Oh, I'm thinking, oh, okay, John. You know, you want to get off this train or do you want to stay on this train? You know, and sometimes I get off the train and I get sucked back on it, and I get off and I get sucked back on it again. Somehow it has some, you know, some feeling, some emotion that's kind of catches it, and I run along after it for a little while, you know. But then if I can simply go, oh, it's just a thought. And then, oh, wait, there's also some kind of contraction, some kind of feeling I have. And if I can, and for a long time, you know, for so many years there, I think I just had no idea what a feeling was even. You know, I just ran over it, you know. And I began to see, oh, it's a subtlety. It wasn't just black and white. It was actually this whole cacophony of like a rainbow of different subtle, sometimes feelings that were changing all the time, you know, and that I could actually feel where they were and actually have some cognitive sense of the flavor or the coloring of it, you know. And with that, again, the separateness between the content and the contraction sometimes, and the process that was going on, you know. I like this. This is just symptoms of inner peace. And I think of, you know, if you can be the Kailash, you can be this mountain with wisdom as its base, and that it has this capacity of loving kindness, of compassion and sympathetic joy, and this even-mindedness. Symptoms of inner peace. A tendency to think and act spontaneously rather than based on past experience. Try that one. You know. An unmistakable ability to enjoy each moment. A loss of interest in judging other people. A loss of interest in judging oneself. A loss of interest in interpreting the actions of others. Not bad, huh? A loss in interest in conflict. A loss of the ability to worry. Frequent overwhelming episodes of appreciation. Contented feelings of connectedness with others and nature. Contented feelings of connectedness with others and nature. Frequent bouts of smiling. And an increased tendency to let things happen rather than make them happen. An increased receptivity to the love extended by others, as well as the uncontrollable urge to extend it. Now that's pretty good, huh? You know? And I hope that, you know, these practices, that this is the consequences, you know, of them, that we suddenly find ourselves not, you know, it's so hard. You're never gonna actually mend your story. You know, you can spend hours and hours and hours tangling, re-entangling, disentangling, you know. But from this practice's point of view, you know, that there is something that's immediate, that is not based on the past, you know. And that we train ourselves over and over and over again, you know, ultimately in your basic goodness, you know, and that becomes more of your way of responding instead of just reacting to through old habits of things, you know. There is a capacity to, you know, it's wonderful for me. I understand, you know, this word intuition, you know, intuitive, that somehow getting underneath the formulation of our cognitive abilities of looking at everything as words and seeing that there's actually experience underneath that, that it knows, you know. And that the idea here is that as we go along, we begin to trust, in a sense, not so much in the words anymore, but in this sensing, this, you could call it intuitive, this, you know, I'm listening to something greater. You know, because my nature is to try to confine and make it small all the time, you know, so I understand it. And wonder if you can't understand this. You can't understand the trees or the birds, you know, or people or all of that. Maybe it's not to be understood in the way we think. It's actually to be experienced in a way that allows us in some means that you have the capacity to know, you know. But it's no longer in the formulation or the words itself. It's in a sensing or a feeling, you know. And that you find a place. And for me, it's, you know, it is in my body, you know. I like in a lot of the, you know, the Taoist and the internal martial arts and external martial arts of bringing the attention down into the belly, you know, and seeing if I can know from there. And so then suddenly it's not only the mind, and I'm not saying the brain and how it works, but also there's a combination. The combination is that there is this, you know, the body is millions of years of genetic intelligence, that it breathes for you, it beats a heart, it, you know, digests, it does all this stuff, you know, and you don't do anything about it, you know. Oh yeah, you try to give it the right food and all these things, and you know, but can we learn to trust a little more that it's working, you know, and that working is actually our practice is kind of, this is kind of tricky, is that our nature is kind of negative in some ways. And that negativity means I'm going to close down and I have to control it and make sure that I get it right. Right? That's kind of the nature. So what we're talking about here is actually, what are we doing here? We're actually doing something counterintuitive. It's actually, we're trying to base our experience on the fact of, yes, the first instinct may be to shut down, but we know that, you know, that so much of fear is, you know, the tiger is going to come to the cave. And we have a whole society where the tiger is coming to the cave, but there ain't no tiger. You know, it's just a made-up thing that's going on. And that out of that, there's the contraction and the trying to outthink it and trying to somehow outman it or outwoman it so that we'll be okay. But there's maybe another way. And the other way is actually counterintuitive. It's actually saying, oh, the contraction happens and instinctively I want to shut down. But wonder if you train yourself to not do that. And this is really what we're doing here is instead of shutting down, we say, oh, guess what? Oh, there may be more going on here than meets my senses and my brain and all that. And I wonder if I just took and kind of just didn't know, kind of just stayed home. See what? See, yeah, yes, I have to have a little patience and not know what's going on. You know? And you're not afraid of not knowing. You know, because that's the instinct, afraid of not knowing. And so suddenly we've trained ourselves to do something quite counterintuitive, quite opposite. It's, oh, I can stand in the middle of all this sometimes complete chaos and trust that there's a knowing that's going on, you know. And whatever's happening, it may not be what it necessarily appears to be. You know, you don't know that. And of course, it may be what it appears to be too. But if there's this intuitive kind of connectedness where the mind and the body and the heart are kind of lined up, you're going to be fine. You're incredibly brilliant, intelligent people, you know, who have the versatility and the adaptability to respond without making it all up, you know. I mean, I'm always amazed when they say, you know, like the brain has what, it can light a 10-watt light bulb. You know, that's how much stuff, that's why I always like to do in the morning. Sometimes I put my attention on my brain and say, relax, brain, come on. I love you, I care for you. You know, there's a piece of that. And that one brain cell, you know, they say, I don't know, this is just, you know, stuff, that it can hold the equivalency of 5 Wikipedias, you know. So it means that we are so vastly more adaptable and intelligent than we could ever kind of put into manufacturing in some way. You know, so see if it's possible. So that's probably good. You know, but I'll read my poem again just to, I don't know, this is what I do, you know, keep me out of trouble. I get in trouble a lot though, but that's okay. Sometimes I forget to, you know, do notes that I should have, you know, sent somebody and I didn't do it. And I screw up. Good time, you know. It's humbling. Even-mindedness. Returning from so many journeys, stories piled upon stories, closing chapter after chapter in some small cave, hidden away some text, forgotten for centuries, held tightly in this silence. This river of our own mythology. You, who have abandoned yourself one too many times, have finally sat down, knowing nothing is forgotten in this place, only amplified. This meditation hall filled to the brim. Stepping back, moving out of this house of dreams, into our own center, holding this lacquered begging bowl, holding last year's dreams over it, knowing this simple gesture, hand opens, dropping it leaf by leaf into this bottomless bowl. I was here to celebrate. After all this living, bargaining over. A place where the hummingbirds come to taste the sweetness of our own openness. A place where the hummingbirds come to taste the sweetness of our own openness. The insecurity slips at last. The rain washes it down the green hillside into the creek, undistinguished from tears or just the toxins of growing up. Sitting like a stone Buddha, unmoved by the longings and the dislikes. Now, no need to move away from the great suffering, or even to be enchanted by the great joy. One sits in even-mindedness with a boundless heart. Earth, water, fire, air find no footing here. One rests. The exile is over. To praise form in the formless, a world where emptiness, just the word, brings your hands together, gives way to a bow in this great understanding. You know now when they use the words luminous or boundless, it is no stranger. You know you can sit in this unknowing, blessed by a taste of grace. So let's just sit for a moment. So I ring the bellless bell. Thank you for your attention. See? Out of nowhere.